Hey there, MuggleCast listeners! I am back to inform you of some excellent news. GoDaddy.com is having better deals than ever. For only $3.59 a month for 12 months, you can get GoDaddy.com's Economy Package. And with 250 gigs of bandwidth, 5 gigs of storage, and up to 500 email accounts, you can get your own website up and running with success. And as usual, enter code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Today's MuggleNet podcast is brought to you by Borders. In May, thousands of Harry Potter fans descended upon New Orleans for the Phoenix Rising Conference. Borders was there to take in the sights and share a lively discussion of the series that has bewitched the world with some of Harry's most dedicated fans. Listen in and watch the action yourself. Check out the Phoenix Rising Borders book club discussion at bordersmedia.com/Harry Potter or click on the Borders banner at the top of the MuggleNet page. The first of many live episodes of MuggleCast this summer, this is MuggleCast episode 99 for July 15th, 2007. We'll be right back.
excited. Over 10,000 fans go out for this every year. They fly from all around the world to this little Chicago suburb. And we're going to be there, getting down to midnight. It's going to be great.
And Andrew, it's only fair that we plug ours now.
It's definitely going to be a million times bigger than this one.
Oh, sure.
It's not going to be 100 tickets. But we will be at, go, Jimmy.
No, I was just going to run off Emerson, but it doesn't matter now.
Large tones. It's going to be a huge event. A week from now, you two will be in Chicago. Mike is going to be doing something in New York. And me and Jamie will be in London. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be a lot of fun. So let's pray for the book. In just a week, everyone will be waiting in line. I don't want it to end. Do you, Emerson? We're just having a little talk backstage, and it's funny because we've all really grown up with Harry Potter, as most of you have here. And this is a very family-oriented convention, so overall, it's going to be sad saying bye to all that hype that we've been looking forward to for 10 years. So anyway, we have a few things to talk about. We wanted to start with a fun story that happened last week, but we need to set it up first.
Can we sort of start with a catchphrase? I don't know if anyone's going to stand this, but the HMS.
First, let's set it up. So, some necessary backstory here. At the premiere, I was on the red carpet with Andrew. I was on the microphone, and he had the camera. And when Colonel Watson came down the line, I was thinking, you know, should I ask her another one of those boring character development questions? Or should I ask her what she really wants to talk about, Ben Shane? So, I said, Emma, has Ivana Lynch maybe mentioned anything to you about somebody named Ben Shane? And she had this look. She was like,
Yeah.
I've heard, and then I said, well, what did Ivana say? She said, well, I don't know how to say this without sounding arrogant, but he said he was a big supporter of mine.
Somehow we managed to get tickets to the after party at the premiere. So, of course, this is my one big chance. My time is coming. I'm going to walk and we're coming face to face. So, I think I was psyched myself up for it all week. Like, the whole week's building up to it, pretty much, you know. We're not going to do this today. So, I get the party. And, you know, you expect to be like, you know, adults sitting around and sipping champagne, you know.
Oh, yes, David, that was a great movie. I really enjoyed that movie. It was a wonderful movie, you know.
But it wasn't like that at all. It was really like a kiddie carnival almost. It was all these games lying outside. It was like rope and paper grip, and I don't know. Bunch of games like that.
So I go into it's indoor and outdoor, so I go to the indoor part. I look around, and there's Dave Radcliffe right there. And he walks by me, and I go, oh, well, Dave's not in here. Who cares? So I walk back out, I walk a little bit, and I run to Robert Pattinson. Still in my mind. Finally, I go back in, and I see him sitting on the couch with a bag. I think he was a bag. And so a bunch of guys standing behind her. There's a line of fans, don't worry, I'm going to take them out. I'm going to do this, but to do it all over again. Anyways, so, just looking at the line of fans, and being, you know, as tactful as I can, like the best way to do this. And so, I don't think it's how to make sure I say, you know, I'll wait until the line of fans is done. Over and I'll start a casual conversation. And of course, Ivana Lynch didn't tell her about it because she's been mobcasting. And so she knew who I was. So it was just, I was going to be like, hey, hi, how are you? I'm a really big fan, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm the one dude. But anyway, so like I said, I walk in and I see her sitting there, you know, and I can feel this is good. It's going down. I was going to be disappointed if I didn't at least get a phone number. And so, So I sit down next to her. The line's finally gone. This is her. This is her first call, by the way. Cool, calm, and collected. She does still bench me better. Anyways, I lean over to her, and I tap her on the shoulder.
Watch out. Don't do that.
Yeah, I lean over and she sees something in that way, and I tap her on the shoulder. And she looks over to me.
And I say, you know, there's only gold having all these people ask for autographs. She says, what? And then this guy, this random guy, comes and sits right between us. Like, it's like literally, a foot gap, okay? A foot gap between us, right? And this bozo comes and sits between us. A complete bozo. But it's happened to me just because I don't think he realized he's asking him a question. So, you know, I sit there, I splash, I say, hey, what's he get the blast? And well, he got up. He got up, and her body got whisked away. And then, that's when I pulled out my nunchucks. And I beat the bodyguard down. I shouldn't have Emma. And she's here with us today. Let me jump out, man. Yeah, so, I didn't actually meet her, really.
But you got to touch her.
Touched her arm. One step closer. It's going to be eventually close. It's going to be
I don't know why you didn't close out the guy who stepped in front of me. Was that more charming?
He was kind of, it was kind of weird to put her on. I think they were friends or something. I just think they were like friends because later on I saw him like sitting next to her and like walking around with his arm around her, but I never did that with his boyfriend.
It was disappointing, but I still got to mingle with Robert Pattinson and all them, so who am I to complain?
But the HMS Venema will sail one day. The anchor's just been put in the sea for a while.
I don't know how it's going to get better.
Well, like Ben was saying earlier, the after party is interesting because you expect it to be a very classy, dignified event. So just Harry Potter is such a big movie, a big franchise. But then you go here and it's like all the music that you would expect to see at your high school dance. It's like it's just cool teenager music. It was a pretty cool party, and there's free drinks, free food, lots of things. You picked that right away, didn't you?
You get this. There was a pizza buffet there. Just for yourself, I think.
Like Warner Brothers.
I thought one of the most interesting things about being at the after party is that, you know, you see all these normal, you know, families, kids, adults, people in suits, and all of a sudden you walk by and like, hey, that guy, oh, Stan Radcliffe, you know, you're like, wow, you're right, they're just walking around like normal people, and just everywhere you go, there's some famous person.
They have dogs with them all the time, or they just walking around.
They always have a bodyguard with them.
Yeah, like Dylan did.
Because he would take all of them all the time.
Most likely.
I mean, you have to not have stand the store and AK-47.
No.
Why did you buy it? That's what I want
to know. Because, you know, I am a big fan of not going to jail.
I can't even believe how incredible the decorations are. They went all out. They spent over $400,000 on this party.
Extra party.
You go into the bathroom, okay? You're sitting there, you're taking a leak, and then all of a sudden you hear, and you look over, and you see in Umbridge's office, all the cats are staring at you while you take a pee.
You're actually in the bathroom.
Weird.
And it's also cool, like, in the inside, where it went down, or where it didn't go down. There are a bunch of picture frames, with the moving video picture frames. Okay. It was really cool.
And they had all the engineers from all the trees. Yeah, and they had a hall of prophecies. It was very well set up. It was amazing. I mean, they actually did more work for that than they did for the actual premiere. The premiere was just a bunch of Order of the Phoenix posters and a bunch of crazy fangraphs. Emerson, you and I did a great... Well, okay. You did a great job of revving up the crowd with all your Muggle-Ed chant. Yes, you did a great job filming them, Andrew.
Well, thanks, Emerson. You did a great job being able to write something off.
I think there's a story that I was going to do about... We were, I was filming in the loosest sense of the word, while Andrew was under this huge umbrella. And Andrew's umbrella holding skills are far from satisfactory. And basically what happened was, he was at the front, then it was the front.
No,
Andrew, what was it?
I was at the front, and Melissa was right next to him. So I was the front, and so you were behind.
But Andrew holds this umbrella, so it's lined up perfectly with the back of my neck. So, like, this brain was just hits the umbrella, he stays dry, Chum stays dry, and his voice is this torrential downpour just goes down, right down like that.
Yeah, that's what people looking back at him, man. It wasn't a puppy dog. You were just
yeah, like,
I was going to go for you, but there's nothing I can do. He's not rough.
You could have moved it back a bit. Anyway, I was holding $1,000 camera. We didn't even have a bag for this camera because it was raining, so Andrew took off his shirt. He was wearing, like, I'm wearing now, yeah. So he took off his shirt, and I poked the sort of camera lens through the sleeve and then wrapped it around. So, soaking, absolutely soaking wet and filming like this, then it was not a nice experience.
That's all bad.
Yeah.
We still have a depressing story, like Ben's with Emma. We never got to interview Joe. She was just on some bozo stuff.
Yeah.
That was your interview. Here's the pressed pit is just a giant circle, and they walk around in this circle. And Joe, for some reason, came over to the people next to us a few spots down, but didn't work her way over to us. And it's kind of depressing because obviously we're going to ask her some questions.
Really?
That's why I said obviously. But so that was a little bit disappointing. We sort of thought afterwards that maybe she was too afraid that we were going to ask her questions about Book 7. And it's been probably been
worse. I think she's been bit by you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to go off. But who was here for the Moaning Myrtle show a little bit earlier today? What do you think of them? Can we bring them up here now? They're here. There they are. Come on up. Let's talk to you guys for a little bit. We were very impressed by it. Stay over here. No, you don't have to do last. Okay, when did this whole Wizard Rock thing begin?
For us, or?
For you and for everyone.
Well, when did Harry and Potter's get together? When?
I'm not sure, but I saw them in 2004.
Yeah. And then we went together to a Harry and Potter's concert in October 2005. And after we saw them, we thought it might be fun to start a band, and Lauren had dressed up as Moaning Myrtle for a book release party. Was it Book 6 that you dressed up as Moaning Myrtle? So I thought that was cool, and it was sort of a joke at first, but we wrote And Then I Died and put like a 30-second clip on the MySpace, and lo and behold, 200 fans within a couple of days, and now we have 10,000. So it kind of taken off from there. But
according to the MySpace thing?
According to the MySpace, yes.
Where do you guys get your inspiration for writing this music? Because there's a lot of Wizard Rock bands out there right now. And you guys are probably one of the bigger ones. I mean, there's the Remus Lupins, there's Harry and the Potters, there's the Hungarian Horntails,
and Andrew and the Sims.
Andrew and the Sims. Oh, okay. But, where do you guys get your ideas for writing this music? And once Book 7 comes out, are you going to start writing right away?
We're definitely planning on, as soon as the book comes out, just, like, getting more ideas. We really hope that Myrtle is in the next book so we have some more material. But as soon as we decided on Myrtle, we looked through all the books, post-it noted all the pages where she was mentioned, and just pretty much wrote about the actual references and then kind of came up with other things on the side.
We knew we were going to have to be creative at that point because, you know, she's mentioned in, like, every other book, and she has little small scenes, but every time that she is mentioned, she does something hilarious. So it's almost like a little bit of fan fiction in our music because we have to draw, you know, experiences that may not have been entirely canon in the book. Stop laughing at me.
So where do you gals have from here?
Do you have any more stops that you need to perform any more this summer?
Yeah, we are doing what we call our poor tour right now. We can't travel outside of like a 2-hour radius from our house. So we are playing in New Jersey and Pennsylvania a whole lot until the book release. And then in August, we are doing a few more shows. So,
so if I want to go out and see you, where can I find that information?
We have all the tour dates are on our MySpace. It's myspace.com/themoaningmyrtles, and our website is themoaningmyrtles.wordpress.com, and all the tour dates are on both of those websites with all the information and directions and other fun stuff.
And if you are one of our fans who keeps messaging us and says, play in New Mexico, or play in Salt Lake City, Utah, then buy our CD, and maybe we can come there and stop being poor college students.
I don't buy a CD.
Thank you guys very much. Good luck on your tour. Good morning, Myrtle. That's one thing. Whenever we announce we're going on tour, we get like, oh, can you please come to insert my little town made up of 500 people? Yeah. We have a bookstore. You can do it here. It's a nice office, but we're trying to go. We're covering cross-country. Where are we going, Ben, exactly?
Oh, geez. Going to Las Vegas, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Tulsa, Oklahoma, St. Louis, Missouri, Chicago, Illinois, Detroit, Michigan, Columbus, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio,
Pittsburgh,
then Prophecy, 2007.
Awesome. And everything will wrap up.
Harry Potter blowout to end all Harry Potter blowouts.
Ladies and gentlemen, Hagrid has entered the auditorium back there. I think we have a Hagrid impression, please.
How you doing?
Okay, well, who saw the movie?
Who didn't see the movie?
Just kidding.
Plus my dad also in the audience. I'll ask you a quick question. Is it worth seeing it in IMAX? I've only asked a couple of people now, but...
So some people are saying no.
About 100 people that just didn't know.
Yeah. Some people are saying no. They're saying the 3D effects just weren't worth it. They're stupid. We have other stupid here. I have your stupid over here. It was the last 20 minutes, right. So, I mean... Oh, really? Okay. See, it's weird. Yeah, one of the podcast workshops today, we were talking about that it may have been an afterthought. Like, they didn't film it for IMAX. Because, for one, it was the last 20 minutes, and they didn't really come out at you. They sort of did, but it was just an effect.
Andrew, I was going to say, you're a technical guy. Do you have to film it for 3D? Or do you, like...
I don't know how that works. They did it digitally, yeah. That's what we were saying. They didn't probably actually plan to do it to release in IMAX. I mean, yeah, we'll just make a quick extra buck. So, I don't know. Anyone here going to see the IMAX, Micah? Well, you guys, some of you are. I mean, I guess before, they'd be cool. It's a good way to see it again. Plus, you have a huge screen that's like all... You can't see anything but the screen. It's amazing. Is it not?
It is amazing, Andrew.
Thank you. But, okay, we wanted to talk about some scenes in the movie that... really got our attention. First of all, panel, overall thoughts on the movie. Start with Emerson down there, work our way over.
See, I thought the movie was very well done. I don't know that they could have done a much better with it, but the fact that Order of the Phoenix was my least favorite Harry Potter book meant that I didn't enjoy the movie as much as I enjoyed the third and the fourth, which I do think are head and shoulders above the first two. They're all good movies, but I'd say Order of the Phoenix falls about number right in the middle of the movies. But I did enjoy it immensely. It was well done.
What about your thoughts, Michael?
Well, I just see the movie first.
It could help. I thought it was pretty good. I thought some small things just ruined it. Well, not ruined it, but just I thought I couldn't trust filmmakers that allowed those things to go in. Like, who hasn't seen it, let me just completely ruin it, okay? The scene when Professor Trelawney is being attacked and then Dumbledore walks away from the scene and he's like, don't you all have some studying to do for all these students around? I just wanted to hit him. Actually, no, I didn't. I wanted Ben to break out into nunchucks and sort him out as well. But,
I take care of these boys.
Yeah. He's got my back. But other than that, I thought it was really good. I thought the battle was good. I like the whole sort of time thing they did with the flipping through the pages, going to flashbacks, that kind of thing. I thought it was the best Potter movie by far. And yeah, it was good. With only a few minor snags that brought it down a bit.
I echo what Jamie said, but unless I'm directing the movie, I'm not going to be happy with it, you know? I mean, the same thing with any Harry Potter fan. Unless they keep every single one of your favorite scenes, they write every line the way that you think it should be written, you're not going to be happy with it. So I have a hard time being critical. Well, I don't, but I have a hard time being critical in the sense that I can't really, like, critique, like, the, oh, my gosh, they cut so much out and all these things. And to me, because, like, when you go to see the movie, it's a lot different than reading the book. I mean, there are two different expectations, and I love the film.
Yeah, but I would say that you have to see the... Sorry, you have to read the book first before you go to the movie, because there are a couple of things you wouldn't understand, you know, if you didn't read the book first. I can't remember any of them, but I just remember it.
Well, the veil, for example. Sorry? The veil, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the veil's not explained in the movie. It's not really much in the book either. But, of course, Bellatrix puts Avada Kedavra on Sirius, which is not the spell that she puts on him in the book. And I thought about this, and I realized that maybe it's because if she used Avada Kedavra, they don't have to explain what happened to Sirius. He's dead.
That would clear it up, too.
But someone mentioned in the podcast discussion that the spell didn't actually hit. Seriously, as we see the spell hit him, like, from the camera angle, you saw, like, the light dive from his eyes and you saw him be, you know, fall back, but it didn't actually hit him.
I remember seeing him, like, he's holding up, like, stumbled and fall through. I mean, he does have balance. He stood in front of the veil for a really long time. It wasn't like he just stepped back and was like, whoa! I think Bellatrix's spell actually hit him,
exactly. So the point is that he tripped, avoiding the spell. That's why he's done to the veil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, but I don't know.
Imelda's son is the perfect Umbridge. There is no way anyone else, not a single other person, the 6 billion on this planet, could ever do that. That sickening smile. Everything she says it with that smile that I am better than you and I have more power than you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
It was perfect.
Did anyone see the MuggleNet interview clips on MuggleNet.com? Yeah, everyone see the beginning with Imelda Staunton? What do you think of that? Best video clip ever.
MuggleNet.
Yeah.
No, we heard the rest of our thoughts about the film. What did you think?
Thank you, Ben. Well, listen, I came out of it, and many people I've talked about this came out of the film thinking just, I mean, it's mixed. It's very mixed, in my opinion. There's, I was expecting so much more. I was really looking forward to the scene seeing Snape enter Harry's mind. I thought there would be a lot more emphasis on that, a lot more drama in that scene. And, of course, that was short. The Umbridge stuff was perfect. They did do a few montages, which was an interesting way of moving the movie forward. But
what's a montage?
A montage? It's about, like,
when they put the newspaper.
Well, that, but also, like, just a bunch of clips all thrown together. Like, when Umbridge is wreaking havoc on the school. Well, not wreaking havoc, but laying smack down on the entire school. Things like that.
One last thing I was going to talk about, which I think we mentioned on a show, which was one more thing, which completely spoiled. It's a spoiler, once again, but it was just a nagging thing. Was when Harry left Privet Drive and went to Grimmauld Place, and instead of him seeing and reading the piece of parchment that tells him where it is, Moody tapped his stick in some kind of jafar. I expected, like, Aladdin 5, Return to the Cave, or something like that.
That was one of the first things that ruined my enjoyment for the film, because it was so far off from the book. It didn't make sense.
But more than that, it's like, that charm is so important in the entire scheme of things. You know, it's Sirius and Pettigrew and the Secret Keeper. So it just seems like you shouldn't make that mistake.
Well, I don't think it's really a mistake, because the Secret Keeper charm was explained in the third film. And that's a really good point to make. It was the best point you've heard in your life, but I forgot. So, shout out to you.
But okay, what other scenes are sort of far off? I don't want to be too
negative. Oh, I remember now. Okay, I'm good.
Okay, so when Harry,
the first thing I noticed in the film, I saw this movie in London, and I was writing notes the whole entire time. And this is really nitpicky, but the opening of the film, when Harry and Dudley are running, they're like running side by side. And Dudley's bad. He can't do that. The second thing I thought I messed up was when we get back to Fig. Arabella Fig was the worst Fig ever because she said, she's just like, why do you keep your word, that boy? And instead of, in the books, was, you know, she's angry almost with the borderline, you know, she's really stern, she's like, keep your wand out, are you a fool, keep your wand out, you know. And, but in the movie, she was too weak, I thought she was going to be a lot stronger. And then you get back to the house, and there's Richard Griffiths, and he's all, oh my god, Chanel, boy! And then, but in the book, it wasn't like that at all, but, I mean, for a moviegoer's perspective, I thought it was still good.
But there was that classic shot I thought was hilarious when it cuts to him and he's huddled in the freezer spooning some ice cream. That was hilarious. I thought,
Anytime in the movies when there's any kind of conflict between characters, whenever they're fighting or arguing, whenever, you know, Draco Malfoy comes up to Harry and says, you know, and it's not realistic at all. Like, it's not, he's trying to be angry, they're trying to be angry at each other, but that's not how it actually happens in the real world. That's just like a movie scene kind of argument. You guys know what I mean there? Like, he's not clever or sarcastic or funny or witty in any way. It's just saying something that I would expect, like, a second grader says. And
he's lost by the
And Brent, there's
blood, blood.
And then,
let me add in.
But it is a movie and there's magic in it, so, you know, you can't expect it to echo the real world completely.
Good point. I don't know. Raise your hand if you enjoyed the film. You thought they did a good job.
That's
pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, the reviews out there have been really mixed.
Yeah. In comparison to the other films, would anyone call it their favorite film now? People have been calling it their favorite film. But do you call it that just because it just came out? Like, everyone says that each one is their favorite.
Wow, Sorcerer's Stone, oh my gosh, it was amazing.
Oh, Chamber is even better, wow. Prince of Azkaban, oh my god. Goblet of Fire, wow, Mike Newell. Order of Phoenix, whoa, Umbridge.
No one ever said that Chamber of Secrets is their favorite film ever.
Well, it was everybody's favorite film ever when it came out.
Yeah, exactly.
Either way.
It was not difficult at all.
Here's what usually happens. I've noticed this. After Goblet of Fire, we got out of the premiere, we came to the podcast, we started talking about the film, and all it came from up here back then was praise. Oh my god, Goblet of Fire was a wonderful film.
And then
about a week later, all of a sudden, the same people who were like, oh, they're doing a great job, all of a sudden turned into, you know, they really messed up this line.
It's like, come on, I mean, really? You were just saying how awesome the film was a minute ago,
and I don't know, I just think that sometimes Harry Potter fans, by nature, are going to be very critical and analyze things a little too much, so.
The movies are learning more than anything, you know, they have got better. I think each one has got considerably better when people realize what the fans want, what the fans don't want, so like, I enjoy one, but I thought it was terrible. Book two was pretty terrible as well.
One thing I would have liked to see more of in this movie was, because it was like 2.5 hours of depressing stuff, and then there was
depressing
at the end, and I know that's how it was in the book, but I feel they could have used a little more humor to lighten the mood a little bit, because I just came out of the movie feeling a little bit tired, because I felt for Harry, and I felt for the characters, and it was just such a dark, dark book, so it was a dark movie, too. And a little humor, I think, could have injected a little more life into the movie.
Right. There was a bit of humor still, but they still kept in the teaspoon quote, which I was really pleased about, you know, the emotional range of a teaspoon.
Yeah.
Something that I noticed, I was thinking about, you know, in my mind, was that the first people was rated PG, correct?
Yeah.
And
so was movie three.
Yeah, that's right. So, I don't know, just how many PG films out there do you enjoy? I think, because I remember watching the film when I was younger. I remember watching the first film when I was younger, and I was so into those things. They were amazing movies to me. So, I don't know, I think maybe they were targeting a different audience back then as opposed to now.
Yeah.
Because people have grown up in series.
There were more PG books as well, like One Is On As Dark As 3, 4, 5, 6, and probably 7 as well. So, I think that it's going to get darker, the movies. You know, 6 is going to be very, very scary, and then 7 is just going to be...
What's 7?
NC-17.
Well, there were so many people dying in the 7th book. I mean, okay, this is probably a stretch now that I have to say it out loud, but could it be rated movie R? Or rated R?
No.
You guys don't know what's happening in book 7.
I'm just like, no.
It could be some really nasty stuff going on in there.
No, there's like
stabbing.
All you're thinking about?
That's the
What about Michael Gambon?
Personally, I think Tupac
is a way better Dumbledore.
Where you at, buddy? I don't actually share Ben's view on this one, even though we tend to see eye to eye on most things. Even though there are a couple lines that bother me, just like they bother every other Harry Potter fan because they weren't Dumbledore-ish. But at the same point, Richard Harris was not the Dumbledore that I read in the books.
I agree.
Richard Harris was, he acted, and he was actually dying, so he acted like a dying old man. There was no energy, there was no spark in anything that he said. He didn't have that Dumbledore twinkle that Gambon shows from time to time.
Yes. he had much more of a twinkle than Michael Gambon.
Which is hilarious.
But he had no powerful twinkle. Like, I trusted Michael Gambon to save the day rather than Richard Harris to save the day again.
I thought Richard Harris to mean he was Dumbledore.
Yeah.
And I thought even though
the raspy.
Anyways,
I feel like, but with Richard Harris, I just felt like he wasn't that. He didn't seem in control. He didn't seem in command. I felt like a strong gust of wind would knock him off his feet. You guys know what I mean? But that's just the Dumbledore that I picture in the books was powerful. He was strong. He was kind, and he had energy.
I think you would appreciate this. I think Michael Gambon. He's a feistier Dumbledore, but it's not even Dumbledore. He's a feistier person because Dumbledore isn't. Dumbledore is supposed to be, you know, when Dumbledore enters the room, he's supposed to carry the aura of, you want to mess with this? You know, and in the movies, I thought that much of him, whereas, because Richard Harris had the look on his face, everything, whereas Michael Gambon, to me, I thought he was way too angry. Like in the movie 4, when he grabs Harry and he's like, that's just way out of line.
See, I feel like everybody's judging Michael Gambon based on a couple of lines that were delivered very poorly, but you definitely see that Dumbledore power when you're watching that battle in the Department of Mysteries at the end of the movie. Can you imagine Richard Harris doing that? I can't imagine it. I just can't imagine Richard Harris steaming that's larger than life like Michael Gambon did.
Yeah.
He's got that spark that I just never saw with Harris. And I did think Harris was a good Dumbledore at the time. In hindsight, however.
But I think it's hard to compare the two considering that Richard Harris never got the opportunity to play beyond the
good point, Michael.
So Harris?
Yeah, that is a good point because they are different films, so.
Do you imagine Richard Harris in Half-Blood Prince? Like, I can't see that.
Yeah.
You can see him acting in Half-Blood Prince. I'm gonna stop picking Richard Harris now. I'm getting Jimmy. I just think in that rowboat, like, you know, going out to the cave in the middle of the lake, and like, I'm stopping.
I just think when you have an actor who hasn't even read the book,
A lot of the actors haven't read the books. I mean, I was really. That's a matter of opinion, Ben. Either way, I mean, they don't all read the books. They should, I think. I completely agree they should, but they don't all. You can't just pick on Michael Gambon for that.
Well, one person in our podcast workshop brought up a good point where Michael Gambon doesn't even wear the glasses. So, where do they wear the glasses?
That's Dumbledore. The half moon spectacles. I thought Gambon did a great job in terms of like, this film. He had a little bit more of the wittier lines, and he did the funny role a lot better. But in terms of the serious role, when he's talking to Harry and those things, I was displeased with that. But I don't know.
But when it comes to funny, I mean, just remember that was a first line. That was funny in the book, but in the movie, it just kind of was like,
Yeah. You talk about serious.
Yeah, oh, man. Gary Oldman is the man, seriously. He's the man. I mean, you see this guy. He's another one who, granted, has not read the books either. He sees it as just a role. He said that. However, he portrays serious perfectly.
There's one scene when he's talking to Harry in the tapestry room. And he's like, you know, everyone has good and evil thoughts, and it's your choices and whether you act on good or evil is important. And it was sad.
Yeah. Well, it was great. I loved him in Grimwald Place because he has that one line to Harry. I can't remember exactly, but Harry's trying to argue that he's old enough to be in Dumbledore's army.
And Order.
The Order, sorry. And Sirius gives him that little wink, so like, after he talks back to Molly.
He's just too cool, seriously. Like, the saddest line in the film was in the Department of Mysteries when he calls him James. That's like,
aww.
It wrenched out my little fangirl heart.
Please don't see that very often.
You don't see that,
but I really did.
What else were those guys? I mean, like, Emerson, was there any scene in particular for you that was that made the film for you?
Ginny bringing down the house in the Department of Mysteries.
That was, oh my gosh.
Although
I didn't think it was a duel ride, I think it would have done a better job. It was still pretty awesome. Like,
and that's me.
I chills the entire time. Was Steven with me there? And he was just,
oh my god.
Oh my god, Dumbledore!
I'm so glad they left him that line about, you shouldn't have come here tonight, Tom. Because it just shows how awesome Dumbledore is that he can still call him Tom, even though he's, one book from death.
Yeah, those Dumbledore bad butt lines are the best.
Right, yeah. So cool.
But the one problem I have with the
dude is dead.
What's in the book? In the book, they wrote it. They wrote it as, I was under the impression the entire time Dumbledore was in control of that battle. There was no way that Dumbledore was going to be defeated by Voldemort that night. And in the movie, however, it became a lot more of a struggle.
No, in the book, there are a couple of times where he's in trouble, like when Hawks has to swallow the Avada Kedavra spell. And there's one more, I think, when he has to shake something off, or like a snake comes after him and he just in time whips it into something else, which then gets hold of his head. I just bust out your nunchucks or something out like that.
That's the mind of me,
sorry. If another great scene is when Dumbledore is getting out of his office when Ministry comes out.
That's another
fantastic Dumbledore scene, especially when Kingsley Shacklebolt says, I can't remember the exact line, but he says, Dumbledore's got style, and that was so, it was perfect. It was so perfect.
I enjoyed that scene, but that was one of my favorite scenes in all the books, and there was a couple lines in there that I really wish there was in there. Like when he's talking to Dawlish and he's saying, you know, I'm sure you were a fine or and you did well on your newts, blah blah blah, and then, you know, basically don't make me hurt you.
Yeah.
So I'm Dumbledore and you're not. Why couldn't they put that in there? That was such a good conversation.
Yeah. Now, I think you're back to Paris, but I was thinking about the one moment that made him for Dumbledore.
It's like I was thinking about how in Dumbledore's office when he disappears from the Minister of Magic and all of them. In that moment, I think Dumbledore has to have the aura about him, I don't think he did that well. But in Chamber of Secrets, when, the writing on the wall, the arrow, the silver, whatever, when Richard Harris walks up to that, I think he asked then. If I did that moment, I got chills then.
I thought Gammon was amazing at that, but he just winked. And he knew what was going to happen. Like, he planned it for ages. He knew exactly what was going to go down. He knew what, who was going to be there, what was going to happen. And Fox knew what was going on. Yeah, I just felt like he had a glint in his eye that knew that he planned everything and he knew what was going to happen.
Another line from the movie that was just too cool to exist was when the Stone Jars were carrying off Umbridge from Star Tester. I must not tell lies.
Yeah, that was really good.
McGonagall also has a good role in the film here.
Unfortunately, it's Tilda, though. It's Tilda, basically.
Well,
she was something stronger than she was.
She stood up to Umbridge, but I think it was a shame that you didn't see her play a nicer role. She was always extremely frustrated in this movie whenever she was on camera, which is sort of a shame, but I guess that puts across the point that nobody at Hogwarts was really happy about that.
What Umbridge was doing,
that was what that blast like that in the book. That would be cool.
You know, if you think about how critical we are of these movies and how much, to what level we hold the producers of these films at, and the fact that we criticize the tiniest, most inconsequential things compared to what most filmgoers look at, you gotta admit, they're doing a pretty good job. We're a tough crowd, I think. We're a pretty tough crowd.
Now, guys, 8 days from now.
I have a question, actually. I've been asking myself this a lot lately. Do I actually want the seventh book to come out a week from now? I don't know. I think I don't. How can you want it to come out, but at the same time, how can you not want it to? Bittersweet.
Yeah. I do want to talk about one thing. There was a new interview with J.K. You okay?
That was about to be fun.
Yeah. I totally broke my setup now. There was a new interview with J.K. Rowling today, well, a part of it. J.K. Rowling says, some people loathe it They will absolutely loathe it. For some people to love it, other people must loathe it. That's just in the nature of the plot. Just as I'm actually really, really happy with it. Oh my god. OMG. So, why would people hate this book? I guess that means some really important characters are dying.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Harry.
But you can't write a good book about a war versus good versus evil. You know, it's going to be sad the entire time. So it isn't automatically that Harry dies. It could just be that some major characters die. But it's going to be a sad book anyway.
I think it's going to end in a way that we're all left happy. I think there's going to be a sense of closure at the end of the book. That's what she's aiming to do all these years. I don't think we're going to end and be, oh my gosh, why didn't you do, I think we'll be happy with it. I trust her.
When I read that line, for a second there, I stopped and I thought, oh man, what happens if I finish the book and it's never happened before, but what if I'm actually disappointed?
You got
me thinking, what if I went out after 7 books on a bad note? What would happen to me? I would just, combust, I think.
No, Emerson, I have a question for you. See, Emerson and I had a book tour. We went all over the United States for whatever.
What will happen, Harry Potter 7? Thanks to all of you for buying it. It was great. Love you all.
But every single tour stop we went to, Emerson would say, raise your hand if Harry is going to die. Go ahead. Raise your hand if Harry is going to die.
Wrong.
Good. Yeah.
See, he was publicly humiliated so many people.
No.
I'm curious,
Emerson. If Harry does die, what will you do for these fans? All these fans that you embarrassed.
I have a bet. I have a food bet that I have to make. So if you want, you can join in with me and we can do it together.
I'll be asking 50 sausages.
See, what I'll do? But he's going to die. Move on with my life. We're making predictions about a book. We're bound to be wrong about some of them, so...
No, but you've been guaranteeing. Like, the Emerson Sparks guaranteeing.
It's more fun that way.
Yeah. And pay Chris Rankin.
Oh, yeah, I'll owe Chris Rankin $10, too. Because he bet me $10 that Harry was going to die. But
pounds, dude.
That's $20.
Who would have thought it then?
Micah.
Who, is Harry going to win? Yeah, is Harry going to win? So you guys, are the good guys going to do it?
I think that's a better question to ask. Not if he's going to live or die, is he going to win? Because he managed to kill himself, so it's a win.
A sacrifice. How does Harry win? What situation would be Harry winning?
Well, we were told that.
I think winning would be Voldemort being gone.
No, right. Voldemort could go, and all of his friends and all of his family, would die. So that wouldn't be a happy ending. That would just be Voldemort gone. Which is not happy, it's just...
No.
I said Harry winning. I didn't say he'd be happy.
Well, I said Harry's going to win. Then, if I killed the most famous divers of all time, but all my friends and all my family died, I wouldn't think that I was winning. I'm not going to lie. So, I'm not sure about you, but not me.
What's possible differences?
Does that conclude our discussion on that for now? Overall, everyone likes it. Round of applause for David Heyman and the crew. David Heyman, Emerson, the producer of the movies, really is a fan of Muggleland, isn't he?
Yeah, when he saw the interview. At the premiere, he kind of went on for a while about how he... Because I told him that I told him that as a representative of the fans, that I thought that he was being a wonderful steward of our series, our beloved books. And he seemed like he was almost on the verge of, crying because he really, really wants us to be happy. He wants to do justice to these books. And then he started talking about how, they use the website all the time to find out what you guys think about all the changes that they're making. So I think David Heyman really is a great guy who means well, and I'm really glad that he's the one making decisions.
Yeah.
It was interesting because he said that he reads, he watches, and he listens on the site, which made me sort of think that he listens to the podcast for some reviews sometimes, but hopefully he doesn't listen to this one because this one's hard.
Dave did a wonderful job.
I just wanted like a 25-minute long David Heyman, love speech. So I think I wouldn't mind him listening to this one.
Yeah. And he is planning to stay on for all 7 films, by the way. So
yeah,
expect better things to come. And David is going to do the 6 films. So
that's a good thing, I think, because we haven't seen the one director directed two films in a row since Chris Columbus. So I think that's
really good.
Yeah, well, after already directing Order of the Phoenix. And he wasn't too sure about the final film, because he said he'd probably be dead by that point.
This is a huge production, it really is.
How awesome would it be if we got Peter Jackson to direct Seven?
That'd be unreal.
How cool would that be? Have there been interviews with him? Somebody must have,
Yeah, I think he's been asked before, haven't they?
Every
director's spoke about it, haven't they? They've been like,
probably.
Well,
when he wants to ask Peter Jackson, what about you? He can just say, I want to do this, and then they go, okay, and then maybe, like, if you haven't read the book yet, maybe, you know, like, King Kong is in the book, and then it'd be sweet. He has experience with that guy.
Basically, remake them all. After Seven come out, remake them with a different director each time, but, like, some of the mainstream ones are already. You know, you just said, I want to see Spielberg do 1 and 2, then Jackson did 3 and 4,
then like Shyamalan do
6, 5 and 6.
Yeah, just
Tim Burton.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Burton. He's a god.
Yeah, Tim Burton and Johnny Depp could be like Dumbledore.
Yeah, he was Johnny Depp playing. You know, I could have seen Johnny Depp as, like, I mean, I think Gary Oldman's the perfect series.
Yeah,
if Johnny Depp was serious, that'd be pretty cool.
Johnny Depp would be good, yeah. That would be awesome.
I think the three best series in the entire world would be Johnny Depp, Gary Oldman, and Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
Always, when I was reading the books, I saw Viggo Mortensen as serious. This, you know, the shaggy black hair, the dark, brooding male.
Oh, such a dude from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always saw him too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aragorn. So that's what I thought of. It wouldn't work now because he's Aragorn. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know. Cross the books over or something.
Okay, well, let's move on to a MuggleCast segment that we do pretty often. Well, James started this on the show a few weeks ago, and it's become a big hit because it's pretty fun. I don't even think you know what I'm talking about.
Maybe connection?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's up to you guys if you want me to do it with these people up here and I'll be significantly harsher, or if you want to.
I think you guys can do it down here. For anyone who thinks, who plays it at home, anyone who plays it at home,
I'll let you
go. This girl right here, you want to come up here real quick? You want to explain how that works?
Make the connection, because we talk about Harry Potter a lot on the podcast, we need some sort of light release. So make the connection is, I'll say, like, you have to make the connection between Harry Potter and then the most random thing in the world ever. So it can just be, just some of the stuff we've come up with, it's been ridiculous. So I have to ask you if you want a tough one or if you want an easy one.
Medium,
okay.
What's your name and where are you from?
Amy from Westchester, PA.
Fantastic MuggleCast tease girl, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm tickled back.
So, in using your medium one, have you seen the film Fight Club?
Which one?
Fight Club.
No.
Okay. Do that then. No.
Didn't you do that on a show?
Yeah, I think so. I would definitely remember though. Oh, yeah. Okay, then. This is a pretty simple one to start off with. Make connection between Harry Potter and Coming to Enlightenment 2007, apart from the obvious one in that they're both...
Andrew,
I didn't realize how bad that was. Okay, then. Do one between Harry Potter and this wonderful building we sit in now.
Okay, well, in Harry Potter, he goes to Hogwarts, which is a very old castle, over 1,000 years old. And it has very high ceilings, and this room also has very high ceilings.
That is a connection, very good. But yeah, the department mysteries at the auditorium, when Harry goes back into the courtroom scene, that's also another connection. That's what I would use.
This is how we keep our brains in check when we're recording this show, you know, we take it to a different one. Okay, Ben, can I give you one now?
Oh, jeez.
This is quite a tough one.
Tell me.
No, this is going to be quite a tough one. Okay.
Round of applause. Great to meet you.
Okay, then. This is going to be quite tough, but I want a connection between Harry Potter and... Have you seen the Boeing 787 that's just been released? Has anyone seen that, the new Boeing aircraft? Well, on this Boeing aircraft... Wait, isn't that... You still have to make a connection. On this Boeing aircraft, instead of having sliders down for the windows and press this button, this window just darkens up.
Okay.
So I would connect with Harry Potter and that feature on the Boeing 787.
That one single feature.
Yeah.
Okay, when you press the button on the aircraft and it turns black, it's similar to when the Dementors approach and everything turns black. Beat that.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. Anything else? I just said that it's the act of pressing that button and everything turns black is kind of symbolic of the book as they progress, so it starts out light and then it gets very, very dark.
So, we press the button to make that happen too?
Yes, we do. It's a second. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I do.
Can you just, like, as like a cop out to any question, you could say that if Jamie asked me to make a connection between Harry Potter and, I don't know, phytoplankton, can you just say that, in the Wizarding World there's stuff is made out of atoms and molecules.
So?
Sorry, Emerson. I'm so good at this game.
I think your segment on the show.
That's the end of that segment.
Spy on Spells. Ladies and gentlemen, this is this week's Spy on Spells.
Ever since that enlightening was having a good time, that includes Spy on Spells.
Tune in next week for another edition.
Spy on Spells.
Did you still want to do this for that?
Yeah,
I do, yeah.
Okay.
So, introduce it. I can't think of any more connections there. But we did this thing at our London podcast where we choose three people from the audience for one side of the debate and three people for another side of the debate. So it would be like Snape is good, Snape is evil. And each of the team would have 2 minutes to debate and, put forward their argument. And then right at the end, the audience would vote on it. And, yeah, so what could our issue be now? Should Snape is evil? Snape is, even though it's been done to death. One second. Okay, fine. So, I think the question is, will Ginny and Harry get back together in book 7 or not? So, three people say yes, they will. And
this guy right here.
Yes.
He did a fantastic job at the podcast workshop today.
And then, three people say they won't.
They won't.
Sparse lights over there.
Yeah.
You guys really don't think...
And you as well.
I think it's the next one, definitely.
Yeah.
No, in the book. You guys aren't, Harry and Hermione shippers, are you? What would
the cover come along?
Yeah.
So, one side stands over here, the other side stands over there.
Watching
one side stands over here, the other side stands over there. You get a minute to plan. So plan quick.
Yes, you've got like 1 minute to come up with the plan.
So we're on final chat right now. You guys enjoy your time in the lightning so far? It's been a really fun event. The opening piece was amazing when the owl flew across the gray ball. I seriously thought it was actually flying. Because I didn't see the script until it got rid of
it. It was actually.
But it was great, man.
I thought Dumbledore was hot.
Yeah.
That bed is just oof.
Yeah. Do some Dumbledore impressions.
Aw, man.
Tell me
what part.
Do the scene in the Ministry of Magic when they're fighting. You did not have to come here tonight, Tom. No, you should not have come here tonight, Tom.
Well, see, it depends on what you do.
I can do a Gambit Dumbledore. I can do a
Harris Dumbledore.
Harris.
No, but Gambit's
like more fun sometimes. I guess it's like the evidence of the Dark Lord's affairs in culture that is not in the nature of the mental
deadlines to be chills when I start the films.
I'm better than Harris Dumbledore.
It is our choices, Harry. Far more than our abilities. It's not what we truly are. Okay, you guys ready?
Your hands are sweaty.
What's the joke?
He was their friend.
That's better than that in that book. I should have taken a part.
The story wasn't much better, by the way. I think you all would agree with me there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, are we ready here?
Okay, let's go.
Okay,
Jim, go starting in 4 seconds. You have 2 minutes as to why Harry and Ginny are together, and go.
Okay, well, Harry and Ginny have to be back together because Ginny looks exactly like Harry's mom, and Harry looks like a lot like his dad, other than the eyes. And so, like, they have to be back together because, like, you know, his parents got married. And plus, like, because Ginny looks exactly like his mom, like, there's a connection between there, and so, yeah.
All right, plus the whole theme of the books is, like, that love is going to conquer all. So if love's going to conquer all, the perfect example of using that would be Harry and Ginny and them, like, coming together and being able to conquer Voldemort together because Ginny is so strong in what she did in, like, magic and being able to use those charms and use those magic spells to, like, help Harry and help the Order. And by showing the theme of love conquers all, like, using that pairing is going to, like, bring that message across way more.
Yeah, and also I think because Ginny is, because she has so powerful, as you said, that she's going to go with him. And she's the only person besides Ron and Hermione that know what Harry's going to be doing for the next year. Well, probably a year. Harry doesn't know that. But, and then, so definitely can be the closest person to him, female to him besides Hermione. And obviously that's not going to happen, so.
And plus, the first person that everybody dates, like, with Hermione and Victor, and then Ron and Lavender, and then Harry and Cho, like, the person that they end up with next... Okay. The person that we end up with, that they end up with next, because we all know that Ron and Hermione are totally going to get together, we know that, like, that they're going to stay together forever because they're, like, made to be. So that means that Harry and Ginny have to get together and just, yeah, because they're made for each other.
And they're all a big family.
Okay, go on.
Oh, I'm Krista Mamani. I'm from Northern Virginia.
Hi, I'm Rachel Kulik. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, I'm William Meyer, and I'm from Princeton, New Jersey.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Andrew
Stanton.
I'm from Medford.
Okay. Now I have the spy for Kent, and and it's gone past the 5 second countdown.
Say your names real quick.
Oh, I'm Catherine. I'm from Vineland, New Jersey.
I'm Aubrey Perry from Wayne, Pennsylvania.
I'm Nora Neely from Melbourne, Pennsylvania.
I'm Georgia Law from Salt Lake City.
Utah.
And who is that? That's Ireland. Okay, go.
Oh, I think, like, when Harry says something, he means it. You know, like, when he does something, he means it. So when he broke up with Ginny, you know, I think he meant it. And also, in the seventh book, Harry has so much on his mind. I don't know if he's really going to be focusing on love.
Well, of course, Voldemort's going to go after Ginny. He finds out that, well, when Sirius died, he did it because Harry really loved Sirius because he was his godfather. If he finds out that Jenny's his girlfriend, he's definitely going to go after Ginny again. I think Harry just has other things on his mind.
Yeah, Harry's not going to be with Ginny, and that's flat out right, because Ginny's just annoying, in my opinion.
Yeah, the other team had some pretty good arguments. I don't know if we can beat them. I guess that's it.
Okay, very good. Round of applause.
I was looking at Harry Potter's Facebook profile the other day, and under relationship status, the real one, and under relationship status, it said it's complicated with Ginny Weasley. So I think this is good. We're going to go for like a mixed answer here. But anyway, okay. That's funny, because I thought it would be.
Should we put it to an audience vote then?
How about you? Should we do this by raising hands? Or should we, like, do it by raising hands because the second one always is louder. Always.
Or have you done research?
I'm going to prove that you're wrong here. Okay. If you think that this side
one. Right now. Now, if you think this guy wants to scream.
Unless you're a big split, then it's harder to decide.
You win this charming contest, man.
Yeah, you win our extra glass of water. No, we'll take you out to lunch sometime.
Thank you very much.
Menu? Okay, cool. Give a round of applause.
You guys want to do one more, or can we move on?
Okay. We need three people who believe that Hogwarts will reopen next year. You in the front row? You in the paperback shirt?
Wait, the discrepancy. There's two.
Oh, the one in the second row. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, next time.
You, sir, the guy that's standing up now, walking across.
And there's three people for the Hogwarts.
Yeah, good. Come up here. There's three that are chosen. Red,
Hogwarts should. Hogwarts should not open. So, when you make your arguments here, be very careful and put them in a certain context, as in, why should Hogwarts be open, rather than it will, because Joe's going to do it that way.
Ben takes debates, you can tell, don't you?
Okay, so three people who believe Hogwarts should not be open. Ty, in the very far back, you look enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Okay, and you in the far back. Are you prepping illegally over there? Before the other team is even assembled?
Should we take some points off
it? Yeah.
One, two. Do we have a third? Yeah, we have a third, right? I see two. What happened? Yeah, everyone's pointing.
I've had her today.
Guys, since we have a minute prep time.
So we'll let these two go first since they've these three go first since they've been talking. You guys ready?
Ready?
First, say your names. Where are you from?
Michael from Baltimore. Eleanor from Chicago.
Yeah.
Madeline from Philadelphia.
Okay.
In 5, 4. Three, two, one, go.
Well, I think Hogwarts will reopen because of this. Well, J.K. Rowling isn't going to get rid of all the Death Eaters, right? I mean, there's still some out there. There'll be some out there still. So they still need to learn how to protect themselves.
We saw in Book 5 with Dumbledore's army that the kids at school can learn a lot and that they really do better when they're together. And we know that Hogwarts has a ton of protective spells on it, and it takes a lot of effort to break into there. So Hogwarts is obviously going to be a lot safer than people's homes. So it's a lot safer for the students to be there than at home.
I don't know. Hogwarts is Harry's home, and he's the only place he's really felt safe and comfortable. And number one. And number two, she created 7 books for 7 of Harry's year, for Harry's 7 years at Hogwarts. And she wouldn't just take it out all of a sudden for the 7th book. And he has to go back and see his friends. And I think the husband of Horcruxes is definitely going to have something to do with Hogwarts.
And they definitely need to get information from Hogwarts because there's a lot of stuff that only the professors there know that no one else really knows. So they need to go back.
And J.K. Rowling said that some of the teachers married, but she said the information about who they married is restricted. And we learned who they married in Book 7, I think. So that maybe they knew something about something of Gryffindors or Ravenclaws to help Harry get on the Horcrux.
20 seconds.
And Hogwarts is a whole lot safer.
And also, not just Harry, it's not just Harry's home, but it's Voldemort's home, too. And I think Voldemort probably, wouldn't let it close, honestly. I don't think he would, like, attack the school, because he has a strong connection to the school, too.
Thank you very much.
Give him a hand. That is going to be tough to beat.
Can you do it? In 5, 4, 3, never mind, go. 2, 1, go.
I'm Laura Sanderson from.
Go on, sorry, keep going.
Okay, I'm Laura Sanderson from St. Charles, Illinois.
I'm Emily Spear from San Diego, California.
I'm Nicole Christian from Richmond, Virginia.
1 minute left. Okay, in 3, 2, 1, go.
Well, Dumbledore's not there anymore, and since Dumbledore was the only person that Voldemort ever feared, then Hogwarts isn't safe anymore, because Voldemort really only attacked Hogwarts when Dumbledore was gone, so they're going to be attacked a lot. And McGonagall, not really that scary or threatening.
Well, like she said, Dumbledore is now gone, and the only reason that Voldemort stayed away from Hogwarts for all these years was because Voldemort was there. I'm sorry, Dumbledore was there. And I mean, in the seventh book, he'll probably be in the Daily Prophet that he's ruling Hogwarts within a few days. I mean, he'll probably just turn to a big school for dark arts.
What is it?
Probably shouldn't be opened because, like she said, Voldemort will probably take over, and he probably really doesn't like anybody that's not in Slytherin and kill everybody. And that'd be kind of unpleasant. And he knows Harry goes to Hogwarts, and he really wants to kill Harry. And so he'd probably search Hogwarts for Harry, or anybody who would be close to Harry, so he could, like, use them against Harry. Or just convert him to school for dark arts.
Yeah, basically, Hogwarts is what Harry's cared about a lot. And since Voldemort basically destroys everything that Harry cares about, then Hogwarts
kind of
do. 20 seconds. I think that's pretty much about it.
Great job.
But also, I think that Hogwarts, I personally think it will reopen after Voldemort gets vanquished.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yes, enjoying the stuff. Now, remember, reserve your shout. You only get one shout. We catch you shouting twice.
Double shouts.
You'll be punished. We're going to watch out for double shouts.
Yeah.
You better be careful.
Banned from Irvine.
Anyways, remember, please save your one shout for the side that you think should win.
Who presented the best argument? Not necessarily the side that you agree with. Remember that. Whoever which side presented the best argument is the side you should vote for.
Now, Hogwarts should be open. Or shouldn't be.
Right. Well, they should have been, right?
I forgot already. Oh, Hogwarts should be open. Give me a screen. Hogwarts shouldn't be open.
Really? Dude, that's what I was trying to tell.
I think the first one was a few decibels louder.
That was
both sides. I was actually very impressed with the arguments that both sides presented. I don't know about the rest of you.
It's already good. One last round of applause. Thank you very much.
Now, something that I'm kind of torn over whether or not Hogwarts should or should not be open, because I like to compare it to the real world, and, you know, even after 9/11 happened, we didn't get paralyzed, and not everyone just, you know, stayed inside their homes, and some people believe that you let evil win by folding, by doing things, by closing down Hogwarts. To me, essentially, would be allowing evil to win. However, at the same time, This side presented about an argument where Dumbledore is gone, and Voldemort, the only reason that one time Voldemort kept him from taking Hogwarts before that was Dumbledore being there. So to me, it's one of those things that's a big dilemma. Do you really want to round up all of your kids and put them in one place? But at the same time, do you really want to let fear have that big of an effect on you?
I mean, what is accomplished by closing down the school? 7 books, 7 years of Hogwarts. Now, where do you think you're gonna be safer at, though? Sending your kids off to, you know, be with 1,000 other witches and wizards, or at home by themselves playing Xbox 360? I don't think you're making any safer by putting your kids out of school. You're depriving them of their education,
of their social lives.
And I don't think that's something Dumbledore wants.
Yeah, I agree on that. You know, you want people to live in fear and think, well, we can't do anything now that he's gone and voting on the back. I think you still want people to go to the school. But just because Harry doesn't go to the school, it doesn't mean it can't remain open. Because, you know, they wouldn't just close it just because Harry isn't going back. And he could, like, I mean, somebody talked to me the other day, and they said that they can see it being set in Hogwarts, but then Harry would go off just like Dumbledore went off during book 6 to go and deal with the Horcruxes. So it would be set in two places, basically.
Right. And listen, I don't think Hogwarts is the same as actually sitting at home and playing Xbox 360, because if you think out from a parent's perspective, which is your child going to be more likely to be killed? Is Voldemort going to be more likely to raid your house and kill your child, or is he going to be more likely to raid Hogwarts and kill a bunch of children? I think he'd definitely be more likely to, you know, kill all the kids.
Since this is a family-oriented Harry Potter convention, I think it's a good question to ask the parents in the audience here. Say you lived in the Wizarding World and you just heard about all the events that happened in Half-Blood Prince. Would you let your child go back to Hogwarts for 7th year? Show of hands. Or just any year, the following year. Show of hands? Okay. There's some. Alright. A few. Now, who wouldn't let their kids go back?
That's a good. You really just split there. Because yeah. I just think it's the same kind of thought. I don't want my kid there, but at the same time, I'm not going to let them scare me into it.
Right.
But I think it's interesting because both sides have validity to it.
Yeah.
To it.
Let's move on now and take some of your questions, because as always, what we do with these live podcasts, we love hearing your thoughts, whether it's about the book, it's about the movie, it's about the podcast, anything. How do we want this to work? Real quick, Andrew, about Harry going back to school. I personally, I'm a very, very strong believer that Harry has to go back the 7th year. You can't go 6 years of Hogwarts. You can't be that close to graduating. Hogwarts is his home. He has to go back. He has to graduate. Again, 7 books, 7 years of Hogwarts. Now, J.K. Rowling didn't say 6 books, you know, or, you know, six years of Hogwarts and 1 year where he's just, you know, seeing the sights. And, like, yes, he does have a lot in store for him. He has a lot of Horcruxes to track down. He's got a lot of work to do. But Hogwarts is his home. If he doesn't go back to Hogwarts, where is he going to go?
I'm sure he'll find somewhere.
Why? Okay, so let's take some questions now. This lovely woman. Well, here, can you come up here? Real quick. Because we need to get this. This is going to be, by the way, this is MuggleCast episode 99. The next episode. The next episode is going to be episode 100. Jamie.
Yeah, we're doing some water signs in London.
Your name, where you're from?
My name is Tammy Gould. I'm from Waterville, Maine.
What is your question?
My question deals with the movie and something I didn't hear you gentlemen talk about earlier. What was Percy Weasley doing there with no lines? They brought the character back, but then didn't give him any lines. So are we pulling Percy back in because Percy has a role later on and we don't want the movie audience to forget him? It was sort of like Creature. Creature had served no purpose, but Creature was there. Sort of populating the movie for future reference.
I would say that Jo is sort of a big believer in putting messages in her books, moral messages, and one of the things that she's always talked about is that people who do wrong can repent, you know, and sort of come back to the good side. So Percy Weasley is one of those characters, along with Draco Malfoy, who has the potential to, you know, think, what have I been doing? Oh no, you know, I'm going to go and help the good side now. So perhaps he was put in the film just as sort of like a reminder that he's still there. He hasn't seen the error of his ways, but perhaps in book 7 he will do.
Yeah. I think you brought up a good point. There was that big debate over Creature. Where'd she go? Oh, there you go. There was that big debate about Creature. Joe specifically said
if you want the movies to make sense later on, keep Creature in. They said they thought about it for 5 seconds, and then he was in. So, yeah, I think Percy, something's going on with Percy. Granted, though, I would like to see a couple lines from him acting like that meanie head that he is in the book. What's that? He's a git, yes.
And a meanie head. How old are you, Andrew? 5?
Pooping head. Okay, so, let's see. This one right now?
Hi, my name is Lisa Renestella. I'm from Houston, Texas.
Did you come here just for lightning?
Yes.
Awesome.
I know Lord Voldy's evil, who is born evil, right? But why is everybody hating on him? Because if you get past his face, that's Ralph Fiennes in it. He's
Who's that? Can you repeat it?
Ralph Fiennes is hot, basically. That's what I'm saying. So, why is everyone hating on Voldemort?
Well, it's because of the thousands of people he's killed that done it for most people, I think. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I'm also forgiving and forgetting, but that's just taking it a bit far.
Yeah. Well, you see people associate the movie characters oftentimes with the book character, like the star in the movie with the book. Like, you know, this girl's like, oh my god, Joe can't kill Draco. He can't kill him. But in reality, it's Joe can't kill Tom Felton. He's just so crazy.
That is true. And Joe said, oh no, I didn't mean that was him. I meant that you can do that. Okay. After that, I was going to say that, Voldemort was the one character that Joe could not get a reprieve. He is evil to the bone and
a psychopath.
He's a psychopath, yeah, so, you know.
We have a question from my buddy Kyle. We go way back. Go back to last summer. Yeah. I guess I just got it.
For the record, though, Tom Felton is not dreaming until.
I just have a sort of rebuttal for you guys. On the cover of the U.S. edition for the new Harry Potter book, you said that Harry has like a Horcrux in his little pouch that he has on his around his neck.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I don't think that's anything. I just think it's like a picture, like maybe a sweater or something, because it looks like a stag if you look at it, because you can see like a foot on the bottom, and you see where the drawstring is, it just stops, and that's probably the antler.
Could that just be the way Mary Grimfrey illustrated it?
Well,
I'm saying, because you said it looks like a, what did you say it looks like again?
A stag.
A stag.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a locket.
Kind of a pouch, right?
Well,
yeah, the pouch.
Or pouch. Oh,
well, the pouch of the locket is because on the show we sort of discussed that perhaps it's the locket.
Yeah, well, no, you said it's inside of it. You said it's like
right,
a
pouch. Right, inside, you know.
Yeah. But I disagree because. And if you look, you'd see, like, there's an eye on it where the head would be and everything.
Right.
Am I missing that? Is it a pouch? Is it a pouch?
That's what you guys said.
It's a pouch on the cover. It looks like it's a little pouch. Well, I think a pouch has a two-way mirror inside. I guarantee it.
How many wouldn't carry a
pouch? That's not a fanny pack.
Yeah. In fact, when he keeps his wand in there, he just brings it out when he needs it. Voldemort would die laughing.
That's how he gets off.
Yeah.
And,
he sold it finally.
Do you have the pickle pack wristbands?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do.
We're going to after the show.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Does anybody have a question? Anybody?
What about just on the end there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm back to you.
What's your name? Where are you from?
I'm Crystal. I'm from outside Philadelphia. And my question is, two parts. What did you guys think of the Thestrals in the movie? And then, do you think the Muggles can see the Thestrals if they have, like, seen death like Harry has and Luna has?
I thought the Thestrals were pretty cool. They were awesome, but it reminded me of the Ringwraith horses from Lord of the Rings. So, what I want to see now, and it would make my lifetime, is a Dementor came closing down and rode a Thestral off into the wilderness.
See, I think, I don't think Muggles can see the Thestrals for the same reason that Muggles can't see Dementors either. I think you have to have magic running through your blood to be able to see them. Yeah, I thought they look cool too. What was the second part of the question?
What do you
what do you think of them, and then do you think Muggles can see them?
Are you able to ask us this question the other day?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, we're someone did, because then we said, no, because it's like wizards can't, it's like someone could attest to spells, it's just a magical trick for theirs. Okay, next caller. Let's get someone in the back here. This guy. Yeah, we haven't had a guy come up here yet. Everything's sweet. Considering like 78% of the listeners are girls. Ew. What's your name and where are you from? Probably not even a listener.
I'm Kyle from Fairfax. What role do you think Grindelwald will have in the Seven Books? Like, his legacy or whatever? Because I have this theory that he was the one who helped Regulus across Voldemort's lake thing. And the reason he could go in the lake because he wasn't at full power because of what Dumbledore because of how Dumbledore defeated him. And then by drinking the potion, that's what killed him. And it's like to make sure there's, because Voldemort's like stealing his thunder or whatever.
That's very interesting because I read on a message board a while back that Voldemort was merely a puppet for a higher power, and that Joe was very specifically worded the writing was put on the back of the Chocolate Frog card, you know, when she was like, Dumbledore defeated Grindelwald. He didn't kill Voldemort. He didn't, you know. So there's a theory that I read that Grindelwald is actually the higher power and Voldemort is just someone who's working for him. But away from that, because that is quite far-fetched, Grindelwald, I think, she wouldn't mention him, I don't think, and she wouldn't specifically use the word defeat if we weren't going to see him again, or not see him again, but hear from him again, you know.
She did say he was dead, but she didn't say that Dumbledore killed him.
Alright, thank you, Kyle.
Andrew. Say
that. God, cross them up. Oh, yeah, I wonder why. I love Jamie's shirt.
Okay. J.K. Rowling said that she was going to reveal something about Lily Potter in the book, and I don't think she really revealed anything big, so do you guys have any theories about what she was going to reveal, or if she already did reveal something?
See, that's really interesting, because I remember prior to book 5, there was all the speculation about how we're going to learn something about Lily Potter in the 5th film, in the 5th book, excuse me. Does anybody know what it is? I mean,
it's brilliant. Yeah. I bet it was that.
I know we talked on one of our shows saying that she was probably of some sort of use to Voldemort, and that's why Voldemort sort of spared her or gave her the option to live. And one of the things we talked about was her being an alchemist and possibly knowing how to work with the Sorcerer's Stone and work with something that would provide him immortality. So I think that might be her secret.
David,
can I have something to do with the Remember My Last?
Sorry?
With the Remember My Last.
What about it?
Petunia, Remember My Last. Just, it's not directly with Lily, but it could have something, the last could have had something to do with Lily. So. You want to explain, there was a little group formed here at Enlightening. Ma'am, you want to explain what this group Ma'am is all about? Any Ma'am members in here?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, quite a few, okay. I was approached to join the Mothers Against Murdering Molly group, and this is based on the assumption in the MuggleNet book that Molly and Arthur Weasley are two of the characters that have high probability of dying in book 7, so we just think because she's the one constant mothering figure in the whole series that she should be one of the last to go. So that's what that is. My name is Monica Ricks. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. And my question is this. Two of the Marauders are gone. There are two left. Do you think there's any significance to the fact that Remus Lupin is a werewolf and Peter Pettigrew now is in possession of a silver hand?
I don't even think so, but J.K. Rowling said on her website that he will not be having silver hand.
But it was a very good theory.
We had so many theories about that hand, too. And in one fell swoop,
she just shut down the James switching places with Sirius.
That was quite good.
Yeah, there's a theory that just before James died, he switched places with Lupin, and that's why Lupin has always been so close to Harry. He's sort of like treated him like more of a son than just a student. But I thought Otto was awesome, and she shot it down from the sky.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Get a younger person here. Okay, everyone's pointing at her, so. Peer pressure. I'm a sucker for it. I'm always a sucker for the emails that go, Andrew, please read this in all caps. I always click them. It was just like, if the email just says a new theory, I'm like, just kidding,
everyone. Hi, I'm Leah Wittenberg. I'm from Scotland, New Jersey. And my question actually doesn't really have to do with Harry Potter so much as you guys. And I was just wondering how Muggle-met has affected your life and how much time it really takes up, because I know a bunch of you guys are going to college next year, so what you plan on doing with that.
Start with Emerson, since he created it out. What's with your life, Emerson?
Not that much, really. You know, it's a full-time job. I've been doing this for 8.5 years now. I've heard every theory any Harry Potter fan has ever thought of. And it's been really interesting just watching the evolution of the fandom, how much more sophisticated it's gotten, how much bigger it's gotten. There's Harry Potter fans everywhere. 3 different times today, when I was walking around the campus or whatever, people would say, oh, are you a Harry Potter fan? They'd see my Muggle-met shirt. And I'd say, yeah, I like it a bit.
Micah, you weren't a staff member of Muggle-met until MuggleCast came along, and then you IM'd us. You were like, you guys can help with the shows. You need help transcribing, do the intros. Then you worked your way in. How'd you get away with it?
I wormed my way in.
What worked?
Oh, worked.
not worm, but
yeah,
crazy.
No, I mean, it does take a tremendous amount of time and a really good thing, particularly with the transcripts, is how I can just record and show and doing the news and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it is very time consuming, but it's definitely a great thing to do.
Jamie?
I would agree with what both of them have said, and also said that it's been awesome. Best sort of years of my life, ever. And I've met some wonderful people. And I've met some great fans, everyone here, and it's just been absolutely amazing. And I'm going to be really sad for it to end. In some ways, I mean, Harry Potter is, you know, one of the. I feel like the spotlight has just come down on me, and I'm opening up for the first time in years. But Harry Potter has been, you know, the book series has been amazing, and I've really enjoyed every minute of it, but I'm grateful to it sort of more for being, you know, all the stuff that's brought me and all the people I've met and that kind of thing.
Just to continue on that, just very briefly, I would say just the thing I'm going to miss more than anything is the moment that you get when, I know Ben has had a few of these moments too, and we visited a lot of bookstores, we met lots of fans, and we heard, I mean, every once in a while, you just hear somebody make an observation, and you'll sit there, and you'll go, wow, how did we miss that? And you have one of those aha moments where you realize that, hey, you're always really smart.
And that happens a lot, doesn't it? Like, somebody will just say something which they think is just a small point, but you'll think, wow, that's just changed everything I've ever thought about one book, or everything I've ever thought about the series as a whole. And it really is unbelievable how sort of like the worldwide power of everyone theorizing can come together on the internet, and that's why the internet's so, you know, good for that kind of thing, because everyone contributes.
I'll just put it this way. I came from a wheat field in Kansas, and now I consider myself to be a pretty seasoned traveler, right? We've been all over the place lately. I mean, this summer has been... It's been hectic. I mean, the traveling has been grueling, but I'm having the time of my life, and I don't want it to end. I mean, book 7 is kind of sad. And, I don't know, over the past few years, it's just, things have evolved so incredibly. I mean, without the podcast, like, all of you wouldn't be here. I mean, it was all luck. It was just, everything was luck. Everything was chance. But I'm just grateful for what it's given me. And I'm not as great as a Harry Potter fan as I was when I started out. I'm not as into it, but at the same time, I enjoy it in a different way because of the people that I've met through it and all of that. So,
No, I agree with all of you guys.
We can hold a group crying session after this, but everybody feels the same way.
Backstage when it starts.
Yeah. Come back there.
No, it really has changed, like, my life. So I started, before I was on Muggle-met, Ben still makes fun of me for this, that to this day I have a website. It was first called HarryPotter'sHouse.com.
So it hasn't happened.
I mean, I don't remember.
This guy,
guy messaged me asking me to work for Muggleland, and his screen name is HP's House. And I'm thinking, HP's House? And then finally, I was like, I gave in, just like Emerson gave in for me when I bugged him for a job. And
every day for 4 months.
I actually spent more time on the computer waiting for Ben to respond to me because I was so paranoid he was gonna IM me when I wasn't there. So I would just sit there. Seriously, I would sit there just waiting for you to respond to me. It got aggravating. And then, do you know that anymore, Andrew? And then the day you told me, you were like, oh, by the way, you're hired. And he's like, didn't I tell you a few days ago? He's like, oh, and I was like, no, you didn't. I was sitting here waiting.
His parents, who happen to be here tonight, give him a round of applause.
And not just his parents, but love my life, my Facebook wife, Sims here. And so is Ryan Sims. Join his Facebook fan club. We have a lot of members.
Someone made that for him.
But I remember when they told me, they were like, yeah, Andrew was coming down here, but when you hired him or whatever, he was interviewing for a job at Muggleland. Yeah. Like, they thought it was so cute or whatever, and then look at him now.
Now. One of the weirdest things is that even though we come from all around the world, and all different walks of life, and we're all different ages, we just think about Andrew's from New Jersey, I'm from the Chicago area, Jamie's from England, Ben's from Kansas, and yet we're all... And like we're all like basically best friends now, and you know people sometimes like you know people ask me you know like well, who runs the website with you and I say oh well you know some of my friends and they're like oh your buddy's from school like, no actually thousands of miles away and yeah it's looking a little weird like I you know something's wrong with me socially but
Like when you're going through customs, when you're coming back, where are you going to? And they always grill you on questions. They're like, what's your reason for going? And I'm not gonna say, oh, they go to a Harry Potter premiere and interview actors, because that's like not necessary. So I just go visiting friends and like, oh, how do you know these friends? I don't want to be a dork and say over the internet. So
I did my online girlfriend.
Yeah. Yahoo personals.
I did that once. When we did a convention last year at Lumos in Las Vegas, Nevada. And this is my first time on my own going through U.S. immigration, and for an outsider, they grill you about everything. And I was standing there, and I said, they have like fingerprints, so I put my fingerprint down there, and I put my second fingerprint down, and then I had this camera, and I was expecting them to ask me to sort of take my clothes off for a search, you know, and stuff like that. So they said, what's your business here? And I said, froze, because you feel nervous, you know, even though you've done nothing wrong. Just being there makes you feel nervous. So I was like, I'm attending a Harry Potter convention in Las Vegas, Nevada. And, I mean, this person had obviously worked there a long time. I don't think in the sort of years that they've worked there, they'd ever heard anything like that. So I hope I made their day with that.
And as I was saying today, during our little podcast discussion that we did, it's amazing that this is all of this, these million, multi-million dollar movies, all of this is because of one woman on a train over 10 years ago. And it's incredible to think just how everything came together, how much chance there had to be. If she would have, you know, how many of you would have stuck through it when Joe, you know, rejected, and finally one last time, you know, I'm going to try it one last time, and, you know, it took off, so, yeah.
Well, so cool.
So, you spoke about emotional sort of memory lane. Should we take another question?
Well, one last question for today. I have a really random observation here. Honestly, when, some of you know, like, I got to interview J.K. Rowling years ago, and it was obviously one of the high points of my life, but I remember thinking that she has this way about her. It's the same way that you kind of imagine if you're sitting across the table from Dumbledore. The person you're talking to is in control. It's cool. She rocks. You just feel like everything she says, she's going to say it hurt because she's J.K. Rowling.
Well, what's wrong?
Yeah. Well, no, this is going to be bad.
Yes.
booty, pad foot. Yeah, that's what I meant. I don't know if there's an order. I think Wormtail is definitely a goner because he's just one of those people.
Yeah.
He's going to get it. But I think, I don't agree with that. Oh, sorry, Micah.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Anyway.
Do you want the whole thing in the chat?
Well, 5,000 words.
Go.
Always prepping. You guys will be able to handle this.
So much pressure.
Well, I guess that,
that's all that I'm doing. I hope that was enough.
It takes a lot of concentration.
It does.
The mind control.
Yeah.
Should we take another question?
One more.
You need to answer.
It is episode 99, after all.
This is the last one before bar 7.
Yay! Who do you call up?
Okay.
Who?
Yeah!
Isn't he good?
Give me one question. What would you do if someone's like, I'm from Ipswich, or
something?
The thing is, I don't understand this cheering thing when someone's from the place that you're in, because America's a big country, so there's quite a big chance that someone's from your state, isn't there? So, like, you're like,
there's 50 states, baby.
Yeah,
and
pretty big. There's like 300 million people.
There's
a lot of pride in our country.
USA! USA! USA!
How to be an American.
I feel so welcome when I come here and see Ben.
Okay. It's all right today.
What are your thoughts on Finite and Cantata reoccurring in the last book?
Well, this is like the thing. They can't battle. I've never thought that they can battle against each other using their wands, which is why Harry has to have a power that Voldemort knows not, love. I don't know how he can kill them using love, but I've always thought they can't battle. But then someone told me the other day that they thought the reason Ollivander was captured from Diagon Alley was so that he could make Voldemort one last special wand that he could use to battle against Harry, but I don't know.
If love is the power of the Dark Lord knows not, and perhaps, at least perhaps, Harry will mail Voldemort a Valentine.
There are these three parts in there.
Be mine, and I love I R U, I L U, like those type of things, and then Voldemort was just so overcome. He's never done a Valentine before.
Ben, if you notice
this secret.
Ben, if you notice with those tweets, they used to be sort of 10 years ago, it was I love you, you know. Talk to me, stuff like that, but now with the internet, it's turned into text me.
Yeah.
Get me on AIM instant messenger.
That's like a commercial, it's like GYLBOBW, you know, it's all just letters. Great question.
It's a good question, yeah. Thank you very much.
You're real fellow Hoosier.
What?
Okay, well, on that note, we have been going for an hour and 45 minutes here. Thank you everyone for coming out here today. Our friend Keith Hawk has one quick announcement, but as he comes up here, we do want to thank a few people right now. Of course, Victoria Breeden, who is the Ministry of Magic, so she's called here. I think she had to get going. A round of applause for her. She organized this entire event. We have been working with her on this podcast and the podcast workshop since, I think, February. So it's been a while. It's been a long time. So special thanks to her. Diane Bittman, of course, and also Keith Hawk. Of course, Kristen right down there. She's been our personal assistant. This water is here because of her.
Right from the Rachel Health Foundation.
We went clear to Wawa to get the water. Give her a round of applause. And of course, everyone else who's put on this. Really, this has been a fantastic event. We were very surprised that the turnout would be so good for a family-oriented convention because there really hasn't been one of these before. But anyway, Keith, nice shirt.
I like my shirt.
One more time. Give him a hand, please.
because of you and the special that we've had for reminding, so thank you very much, guys. This is for the Teen Social. Anybody who's attending the Teen Social, we are meeting in the vestibule out here. The prefects will meet you out here, and you'll all go to your Teen Social dorm. So please meet out here. Okay?
Party, hey. All right, well, thank you, everyone. We hope you have a good night.
We'll see you next week for episode 100. Woo!